Today, featuring the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Chuck Smith, founder of the Calvary Chapel Movement. This radio program is a chapter-by-chapter, verse-by-verse study through the entire Bible. And on today's edition of The Word for Today, Pastor Chuck continues his message, The Son of David, as we pick up in Luke chapter 20, verse 38. And now, with today's study, here's Pastor Chuck.
He is not the God of the dead, but of the living, declaring that 400 years after their recorded deaths, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were still alive in another dimension, another sphere, but still alive because God is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. And the scribes, when they heard that, they said, "Hey, that's all right." They had never been able to argue their case with the Sadducees. But when they heard that argument, they were really pleased with that. Hey, that's all right. You nailed him, you know. You got him. And so they answered Jesus saying, "Master, you have said well. That's good." And after that, they dared not to ask him any more questions. And so he said unto them, "How say they that Christ is David's son?" Now, one of the titles for the Messiah was Son of David. Last week, you remember when we were in Jericho and Jesus was entering the city, there was the blind man who cried out, "Jesus, thou Son of David, have mercy on me." Son of David was a messianic title because they were looking for some descendant of David to arise in power and in authority to establish the kingdom and to overthrow the Roman rule. Thou Son of David, a common title of the Messiah. So he said unto them, "How is it that you say that the Messiah," and the word Christ is the Greek for the Hebrew Messiah. "So how is it that you say the Messiah is David's son? And David himself said in the book of the Psalms," that is in Psalms 110, "The Lord," that is Yahweh, "said unto my Lord," my Adonai, "Sit thou on my right hand till I make thine enemies thy footstool." David therefore called him Lord. How then could he be his son? You are dealing with a culture that is a very strong patriarchal culture. The father rules. No matter how old he is, as long as he's living, he rules over the household. You can be married and have your own grandkids, but if your dad's still alive, he rules. No father would ever call his son Lord. That was a title for the father, for the patriarch of the family. He ruled. So no father would ever say to a son, "Lord," using that title. So Jesus said, look, if he's the son of David, how is it that David called him Lord if he's his son? And of course, they had no answer. And then in the audience of all the people, he said to his disciples, you know, he turns to his disciples now, all the people listening in. He said, "Beware of the scribes, which desire to walk in long robes and love greetings in the markets and the highest seats in the synagogues and the chief rooms in the feast, which devour widows' houses and for a show make long prayers. The same shall receive greater damnation. Beware of those who seek to make a public show, for a pretense make long prayers, devour widows' houses, send out computerized letters, filled with deceit and fraud to the little women on Social Security, asking them to go down to the bank and borrow some money to send to them to help them out of this emergency, who love the honor and the greetings and the palavering of man. Pray for them, because Jesus said they will receive the greater damnation. And he looked up, and he saw the rich men casting their gifts into the treasury. And he saw also a certain poor widow casting in thither 2 mites. A mite was 1/16 of a penny. In other words, it took 16 mites to make a penny. 2 mites would be 1/8 of a penny. Now, here are these rich people putting in their great gifts. And this certain poor little widow goes up, and they're in the temple there. These offering things were sort of like a horn, and they would drop them in. Poor little widow casting in her 2 mites. And he said, "Of a truth I say unto you, that this poor widow has cast in more than all of them. For all of these have of their abundance cast into the offerings of God, but she of her penury hath cast in all of the living that she had." So, an interesting thing in God's economy is not the amount that you give, but what it costs you to give. So many who are giving less in God's economy are giving more. The amount is immaterial. What's the sacrifice? What's it costing you to give? When David was wanting to buy the threshing floor of Araunah, because the angel of the Lord had stopped the plague, it stopped there at the threshing floor of Araunah, and David wanted to buy it and to offer a sacrifice unto God. Araunah says, "Take it, man, it's yours." And David said, "No, I will not give to God that which cost me nothing." And David insisted on buying it. He wouldn't take it as a gift because he wanted to give it to God. And he said, "I won't offer to God that which costs me nothing." What does it cost you to give? That's what God measures the gift by. "And as some of them spake of the temple, how it was adorned with goodly stones and gifts." In the Wars of the Jews by Josephus, book number 5 and chapter 5, he gives an interesting description of the temple in Jerusalem, of these great white columns of solid marble, each column a single stone of solid white marble, and how along the fascia all of these gold shields, so that if you would look at the temple, the reflection of the gold was so tremendous that it was like looking at the sun itself, and you couldn't just look at the temple because of these gold plates when the sun was reflecting off of it. It would be hard in your eyes, like looking in a mirror. And he describes the beauty and the glory of this temple that was built by Herod, describing some of the stones as weighing as much as 180 tons. And so some of them were speaking to Jesus of the temple, how it was adorned with these goodly stones, these beautiful marble towers, and the gifts, the gold and the silver and the brass gates and all that were around it. And he said, "As for these things which you are looking at, the days will come in the which there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." Today, when you go to Jerusalem, as you go up the walk next to the western wall that leads onto the Temple Mount area, they have excavated the area to the right side of this walk. They have excavated down to the pavement that was the Roman street that went through the bottom of the Turopian Valley. And as they have excavated down to this Roman street, street level at the time of Christ, down there on the pavement, which was made of great huge stones, there are these huge stones that have been pushed over the wall and that cracked the pavement down below. And you see them as they are just lying there in disarray as they fell and were pushed over the wall and crashed into the valley several hundred feet below, breaking the pavement down below. I've climbed down in to that area and I've touched these big stones and I've marveled at them, because as I looked at them, I realized I was seeing the fulfillment of the prophecy of Jesus Christ. Not one stone was left standing upon another. They filled the Turopian Valley with stones that they pushed over from the temple, watching them crash below. When we were up in the Grand Canyon, there was one area that I had a bunch of kids, and they were starting to push stones over this canyon cliff because there was about a 3,000-foot drop before they hit. And it was terrifying to see the momentum that these stones would develop before they hit the bottom and the crash, and, of course, come echoing up the canyon. But here were the Roman soldiers, when they destroyed the temple, pushing the stones over. And that whole Turopian Valley was filled with the debris and the stones that they pushed over the wall at the time of the destruction of the temple. But it fulfilled literally the prophecy of Jesus as he said, "You look at these stones, but there shall not be one left standing upon another that will not be thrown down." Thus, as you go up on the Temple Mount, there is no evidence anywhere of where the Temple of Solomon stood. The Temple Mount that he built is there, but there is no evidence at all of the place of the temple, because not one stone was left standing on another. And so they asked him, saying, "Master, when shall these things be?" What things? "When the temple is destroyed and the stones are thrown down. And what sign will there be when these things," that is the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, "what will be the sign when these things come to pass?" And so he said unto them, "Take heed that you be not deceived. For many shall come in my name, saying, 'I am,' and that the time is drawing near. But go ye not therefore after them. But when you shall hear of wars and commotions, don't be terrified. For these things must first come to pass, and the end is not yet. Then he said unto them, 'Nation shall rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom, and there will be great earthquakes in different places, and famines, and pestilences, and fearful signs, and great signs shall there be from heaven.' But before," now these, he's going on to the times of the end with these signs of the great earthquakes in different places, the famines, the pestilences, the fearful signs in heaven, and the worldwide state of wars. "But before all of these, they shall lay their hands on you," coming back to the destruction of the temple, "and they will persecute you, delivering you up into the synagogues and into the prisons, and you'll be brought before kings and rulers for my name's sake. And it shall turn to you for a testimony." Jesus said, look, you're going to get arrested, you're going to be hauled before the kings and all for my name's sake, but that's all right. It's going to give you a chance to witness. And I find it fascinating that every time Paul was brought before a judge or before the king, he took the opportunity to give a witness for Jesus Christ. Oh, King Agrippa, I count it a privilege to be able to share with you what's happened to me, because I know that you've studied the law of the Jews and you understand these things, and the things that Jesus did weren't in a corner. Now, I myself was like you. I thought, you know, to be against this man, and I was commissioned to arrest him and so forth. And he went on and he gave a heavy witness to King Agrippa. King Agrippa, do you believe? I know you believe. You know, Festus said, wait a minute, Paul. You know, your much learning has made you mad. And Agrippa said, hey, wait a minute, hold on. You think that you're going to persuade me to be a Christian? But Paul was trying. Jesus said, hey, they're going to bring you before kings, but don't worry, it's going to give you a chance to witness. And Paul used it every time he got before the king. Now, Paul was taken before Nero. There is nothing in the biblical account that tells us what Paul said. But as we study secular history, it would seem that Nero wasn't too bad a fellow. He was actually very anxious to leave his mark upon Rome and to build some monuments in Rome. His castle is a great monument in itself that has been uncovered recently. But Nero wasn't really too awful a fellow until he met this fellow Paul the Apostle. The first time that Paul was imprisoned in Rome, he had his opportunity. You remember when he was before Festus, he appealed to Caesar. And so he was sent to Rome, placed there in prison, where he wrote his Philippian epistle. And he had his chance to go before Nero. Now, you think that the witness he laid on Agrippa was heavy. You can be sure that Paul thought, man, if I can convert this pagan to Christianity, what that would do. And I'm sure that Paul laid on Nero a witness second to none in the history of the church. Secular history records this dramatic personality change of Nero right after the time that Paul laid the witness on him. It was at that same period of time in history that Nero went through a drastic personality change and became a beast. He burned Rome because he wanted to rebuild a new glorious Rome for his credit. And then he blamed the Christians for it. But he became almost a man possessed, insane. I feel that, personally, that he became demon-possessed after Paul's witness and his rejection of Paul's witness. I believe that he opened his heart and life to demon possession. And I believe that the things that he did can only be ascribed to a man possessed by an evil spirit. But up until that time of Paul's witness, he wasn't that bad of a fellow, historically. So Jesus said, now don't worry about it. It's going to give you a chance to witness. And Paul took that chance every time he got it. And he said, don't make up a little speech in advance in your own heart, what you're going to say. Well, now I'm going to say this and that and the other. But he said, for I will give you a mouth and wisdom which all your adversaries shall not be able to gainsay nor resist. Now don't worry about what you're going to say, because I'll give you the words in that time. And you can wipe them out. And you will be betrayed both by your parents and your brothers and your kinfolk and your friends. And some of you, they will cause you to be put to death. Fox's Book of Martyrs relates to us that sad portion of the history of the church. And ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but there shall not a hair of your head perish. They may kill your body, but after that they have no power. And in your patience, possess ye your souls. What an important bit of instruction. In patience. God help us. We're so impatient when it comes to the things of God. In your patience, possess ye your souls. God, give me patience. And when you will see Jerusalem encircled with armies, which happened within 40 years, then know that the desolation is near. Let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let them that are in the countries enter in thereto. For these are the days of vengeance. Rome is going to take out her vengeance upon the rebellion, and all of the things which are written may be fulfilled. But woe unto them that are with child, and to those that are nursing in those days. For there shall be great distress in the land, and wrath upon this people. And they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and they will be led away captive to all nations. And Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the time of the Gentiles be fulfilled. So in 70 AD, when Titus came with the Roman troops and besieged Jerusalem, killed 1,100,000 Jews, carried away the remaining 97,000 as captive, Israel ceased to be a nation. They were carried away captive into all nations, and the prophecy of Jesus was fulfilled. And Jerusalem from that day had been trodden down by the Gentiles until June of 1967.
We'll return with more of our verse-by-verse Bible study in the book of Luke on our next broadcast as Pastor Chuck continues to teach through the Bible. And we do hope you'll make plans to join us. This message has been provided to you by the generous supporters of the Word for Today. For additional information about how you can support this ministry, please visit us online at thewordfortoday.org, where you can order a physical copy of today's message by mentioning Luke 20 through 21. There you'll also find free message downloads from Pastor Chuck, as well as links to our podcast and other resources to help you grow in your Christian walk. For those of you who wish to call, our number is 1-800-272-9673. Our office hours are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. If you prefer to write, our mailing address is P.O. Box 8000, Costa Mesa, California, 92628. Join us again next time as Pastor Chuck continues his verse-by-verse study through the Bible. That's right here on the next edition of The Word for Today. And now, once again, here's Pastor Chuck.
May the Lord bless you and keep His hand upon your life, and may He help you to walk in all righteousness, holiness, for He is Jehovah our God, and He is a holy God, and He wants His people to be a holy people. That the name of the Lord would not be blasphemed by my actions, but that people in seeing my good work will glorify our Father who is in heaven. God bless you, and may the face of the Lord shine upon you and His love burn in your heart all through the week. In Jesus' name.
The Word for Today resource, A Memoir of Grace, is a beautifully illustrated recount of Pastor Chuck's life. So I am pleased to invite you to pull up a chair and listen as Pastor Chuck tells the story of his life. This book is presented to you with the prayer that what you read will help you see how God's grace is at work in your own life. Everything you have experienced in the past, everything you're going through now, and everything that awaits you on the path ahead is all part of God's plan. His will for you is perfect, and He knows just how to prepare you for your life's purpose. Everything is preparation for something else. I'm your host, Kathy Parrish. Thanks for listening.
Little country church on the edge of town. People coming every day from miles around, for meetings and for songs. It's not the way it used to be.
This program is sponsored by Calvary Chapel of Costa Mesa, California.